8. Yuuzhan Vong Worldship, Coruscant Orbit. Ma Lop paused outside the barrier leading into the tracer spine ray chamber. He glanced at the guard who had conducted him here, as though to ask, "Are you certain he is here?" But the guard avoided eye contact, whether because he dared not look into the eyes of a superior, or because he knew what fate waited beyond the barrier, Ma Law could not say. As Ma Law advanced, the barrier retracted, a fish-like mouth that parted before him, and he stepped into the chamber. It was a place of knowledge and of training. The tracer spine ray was close akin to the provoker spine ray that was capable of tracing neural pathways as its subjects thought about certain topics, and then directing pain into those pathways to prevent the subject from re-examining those thoughts. The tracer, too, traced neural paths, but had only related functions to determine how efficiently signals were transmitted along those pathways, and to issue pain to receptors with micromillimeter precision, allowing the subject to gauge the degree to which tissues remained injured or imbalanced once healing seemed complete. The chamber was poorly lit. Bioluminescent glows reflecting from red and black coral walls, suggesting thick deposits of half-dried blood. It featured one central table with a gray oval top, the carefully engineered terminus of the tracer spine ray, tilted so that one end nearly touched the floor. A male of the Shaper caste stood beside the table. Chavong La lay atop it, his feet toward the ground. He was fully clothed, but his left arm lay bare against the leather-like surface of the table, and Ma La knew that the War Master's visit was purely medical. The tracer spine ray had to be evaluating the condition of the Rodank claw grafted onto his arm. It looked no worse than the last time Ma La had seen it, but no better. Perhaps the War Master wished him to see that it had not deteriorated, so that he might inform others, head off speculation about Savong La's possible rejection of the graft. Savong La glanced at him without moving his head, and beckoned. The Shaper moved to the side so that they might speak privately, but Ma La could feel that one's eyes on him. "I require your insight, my servant," Savong La said. "An interpretation of events." Ma La nodded, not speaking. He preferred not to speak much before his War Master. Those who did inevitably said too much and earned Savong Law's ire. No Manor was constantly on the receiving end of that displeasure. "I dispatched Weirpuk Cha's fleet to Borleos to retrieve it from the infidels. We had assumed that the garrison there was simply intent on dying well. It was, however, a trap. The infidels demonstrated unusual precision, daring, and savagery in a brilliantly conceived and executed plan. They dropped their largest spacecraft, one that we did not know was part of the fleet there, into the heart of Weirpuk Cha's formation and used it to destroy both Yamasks. That spacecraft became a lure for our fleet's other ships, which descended upon it, allowing enemy reinforcing vessels to arrive almost unnoticed and fall upon them from all sides." The War Master was silent for a long moment. "That fleet is all but destroyed. The designated successor to Weirpuk Cha's command leads many of the survivors back to us now. A pilot of Domain Kral has commandeered some of the survivors to bolster his efforts to harass the infidels. Of course, those survivors disobeyed a direct order from the designated successor when they chose to remain with him. I have settled on a plan of action," the War Master concluded. "But I welcome your thoughts." Ma La remained silent for long moments. It would not do to offer half-considered ideas, and Savong La neither disparaged nor was made uncomfortable by long silences. Finally, he said, "If the ambush was as precisely conducted as you describe, it was unquestionably the work of their greatest tactician, Garmbel Iblis. Now, Bel Iblis appears to be in command of an entire fleet group elsewhere. The vessels in Puria system seem to belong to the command of Wedge Antilles. Maul-Law fell silent again as he recalculated. I will need to evaluate the reports of the survivors. But it seems inevitable that Bel Iblis planned that ambush, meaning that he is working very closely with Antilles, meaning that there is great importance to that site. Before we destroy it, we must learn what that importance is, and then we must destroy it so savagely that every infidel who once smiled at the success of that ambush will flinch in dread. Yes. Which means, in turn, that you must personally lead the conquest of Borlaos. Salvanglaw shook his head. I cannot. It will be too great a demand on attentions needed elsewhere. But you are correct. It does need a war master's touch. Maul-Law frowned, not understanding. Then he straightened, as the significance of Savanglaw's words hit him. He will not do it.
He will.
I think he is the finest possible choice, if he can be persuaded to go. Savanglaw nodded. Prepare a ship to take me to Domain La. It shall be done. Maul-Law took the War Master's tone as a dismissal and turned away. Old scars on his back began to itch. Scars dealt by the one whose services Savanglaw was about to employ. When Maul-Law was gone, the War Master gestured for the Shaper to resume his duties and said, What do you conclude? Master Shaper Githradal took a moment to compose his answer before offering it. There is no sign of change. The tissue where the Rodank Clod joins your original flesh continues to decay, continues to heal. There is no sign of rejection with my other implants?
None.
What does that mean to you?
I do not know.
Where your Shaper's knowledge fails you, you still have instincts, opinions. I want them. Do not fear my anger on this point. I can distinguish between fact and opinion. Were I to offer an opinion, War Master, it would be that the true cause of this malady does not lie with the Shaper's science, but with the will of the gods. Savanglaw felt a little thrill as another piece of reality clicked into place in the pattern Vicky Shesh had suggested. Which gods? He asked. Githradal cocked his head, his gesture suggesting that he was not sure. Any god could manifest anger this way, but in my experience, the one most likely to do so is Yun Yuzhan. Still, if I might dare to suggest a course of inquiry for you to take, show me no fear, Githradal, and make your suggestion. I would recommend that you speak to the priests of all the myriad gods and ask them which among the great beings might be angry with you. It is a question for priests, not shapers. Except, Savanglaw thought, when the priests are in collusion with the shapers, what will your reward be? A generous portion of land on the world the Yun Yuzhan priests receive? A continent, perhaps? I will consider this, the War Master said. He rose and allowed Githradal to bring him his garments. And I will seek a second opinion. I will find someone who can speak as a shaper, but does not owe any loyalty to the main orders of shapers. I will bring Nen Yim to me.
Borlaos Occupation, Day 11. Luke Skywalker sat cross-legged on the floor of the Millennium Falcon's forward cargo hold, which was empty of cargo. It was one place in this overcrowded military base where he could be alone, one place where what he was doing was less likely to distress his son. He opened himself to the Force and floated within it. He did not think of the question he hoped he would answer. Thought was counterproductive to intuition, but this time the currents of the Force took him where he wanted to go. He could feel an enduring manifestation of the dark side. It was not waiting for him, not beckoning to him. It had an agenda that had nothing to do with Luke Skywalker, and in the brief moment before he lost his awareness of it, he knew that it still roamed the broken pathways of Coruscant. Han Solo watched his wife come slowly back to life, not long before the loss of Anakin and Jason had shattered her, convinced her that all her works and efforts were meaningless. Once she had realized, at an intellectual level at least, that this was not so, their daughter Jaina's troubles in the Hape system had reminded Leia that she had duties, obligations. She began to carry them out in her customarily brisk and efficient manner, but without the spark of enthusiasm or the wicked humor that were so much a part of the Leia he loved. At any time of day or night, her thoughts might return to Anakin, the way he had suffered and died on his mission to the Yuuzhan Vong worldship above Mirkur. Her breath and color would leave her, and she would have to lean into Han's arms or curl into a ball wherever she was sitting until the pain eased. Han, too, felt the stab of Anakin's loss, but held himself upright, trying not to show it. He was determined to be there for Leia, to never again let her down, the way he had after Chewie's death. But now, as Leia spent her time with her datapad linked to various ships' libraries and her personal archives aboard Millennium Falcon and Rebel Dream, cataloging politicians who owed her favors, reconstructing the measures she and the other founders of the Rebel Alliance had taken when laying the groundwork of their movement more than two decades before, a semblance of enthusiasm was returning to her. The pain from Anakin's loss and uncertainty from Jason's disappearance were still there, undiminished. But when they did not completely occupy her, she seemed more vital, more alive, more herself. Han welcomed the change without entirely understanding its cause. As far as he could tell, she was merely doing the sort of political work she'd been doing for decades. Leia's exclamation startled him out of his studies. "What happened here?" He turned and grinned up at her, at the blank expression she directed toward the open space where Chewbacca's seat had been. "I'm having something Leia-sized put in today." The grin was half genuine amusement at her surprise, half mask to hide his own lingering feelings of dismay. Replacing Chewie's chair, one of the last tangible mementos of the Wookiee's life, had been among the hardest things Han had ever done. "Are you through reorganizing the galaxy for now?" She shook her head, finally turning her attention to her husband. She moved up beside him. "I still have some solar systems to move, and I'll be laundering the Hapes cluster. It could use it." Han dragged her over and onto his lap. "We can start with a solar, the walking headache." But Leia's attention was focused elsewhere, on the planetary data now displayed on the Falcon's computer screens. "Han, what's this?"
"Coruscant."
"I know it's Coruscant. I mean, what are you doing studying it?" He shrugged as though he didn't know the answer, a delaying tactic as he tried to sort among any number of lies he could tell. None of them seemed likely to fool her. Finally, he said, "It's the twins' thing, Leia. Twins are sacred to them. They think Jason and Jaina have meaning to their gods. And that means, if you're right, that Jason is still alive, then he's going to be in the hands of their most important people. Their command worldship is at Coruscant. You don't have to be a genius to figure out that Coruscant, either on the planet or in that worldship, is the most likely place for Jason to be." She looked him in the eye, all levity gone from her expression. "You're not going to go in there after him."
"I might," he said.
"I am," he told himself. "Han, no. Listen to me." This was not Leia's voice of command. It was a plea.
You can't help him. If you go, I'll lose you, too.
I'm as hard to lose as a bad reputation.
Leah didn't bite, didn't respond with any of a dozen glibly appropriate responses. One more sign of her seriousness.
You have to understand. I can't see the Yuuzhan Vong in the Force. I can't see Jason in the Force. But I'm not cut off from the Force. It still shows me things, offers me visions from time to time. When I see either of us going back to Coruscant while it's in Vong hands, I see us failing there, dying there.
Chilled by the tone in Leia's voice, Han shook his head.
Someone has to go.
Luke has to go. He has a chance. We don't.
Leia seemed to deflate, as if the admission that she could offer no help, no comfort to her missing son, had reduced her in volume. But she straightened again in a moment.
You can't help Jason, but you can help me.
How?
With politics.
You know how I feel about politics. You know how good I am at it.
Her smile returned. The resistance means it's time for new politics.
The kind where, if the fellow smiling at you is planning to put a vibroblade in your back, instead of smiling in return, you shoot him.
Really? He thought about it. Shoot him just once or as often as I want.
As long as your blaster's batteries hold out.
Sounds wonderful. What's the catch?
I've accepted the assignment Wedge talked about the other night. Pending you signing on, that is. Once we've got a plan worked up, we'll be traveling from system to system, setting up resistance cells, calling in favors, an extension of the Jedi Underground, probably blundering into Yuuzhan Vong forces and Peace Brigade units.
And shooting them.
Yes.
He opened his mouth to ask if this is what she really wanted to be doing, while one of their surviving children was missing and the other was in unknown circumstances on an almost hostile world. But then he caught the look in her eye, the gleam that had often graced Rebel Alliance leader Leia Organa's expression in the darkest days of the first war with the Empire. The darkest days brought out the best in some people, people like Leia Organa Solo. Now the days were dark again. Now, in spite of the pain and uncertainty she struggled through, Leia was at her best again. She was back.
I'm signing on, lady.
Good. We need a scoundrel like you.
I don't have to be a nice man anymore.
She shook her head and leaned in for a kiss.
From behind them, the sing-song voice of C-3PO blared,
Master Solo, the mechanic with your new co-pilot's chair is here.
Han and Leia both jolted, then Leia dissolved into silent laughter. Han glared at her.
As a reactivated scoundrel, I get to shoot Goldenrod, too, don't I?
She shook her head.
So that's the catch.
That's the catch.
Danny Quee jumped and straightened in her seat, and in the brief moment after she awoke, she couldn't remember what had awakened her, but then it came again, a knock at the door.
Come in, she said automatically, and brushed hair back from her face.
The door slid open, and Tam Elgren stood there, hands held before him as though he wasn't sure quite what to do with them. He put them on his hips, thought the better of it, crossed them before him, and leaned on the door jamb. The door hissed partway closed, recognized him as an obstruction, and hissed open again.
Tam, hello. I didn't think you could be on this corridor.
He offered her an uncertain smile and gestured at the identichip adhering to the front of his shirt.
I'm doing repairs with the civilian repair group, so I can be here.
Ah.
Do you have anything you need repaired?
The door tried to close again. Tam ignored it.
Danny shook her head.
Not really. I've been doing most of my own maintenance.
Oh, right. Well, if you ever get short-handed, be sure to, you know, contact me.
I'll do that. Tam waited there, through one more cycle of the door attempting to close, before appearing to realize that the conversation had probably run its course.
Can I get you something to eat or drink?
No, that's all right. Thank you, anyway.
Well, then, I'll be going.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Tam's expression graduated to perplexed, then pained. He stood back from the door and reached up to rub one of his temples. There's that headache again. The door slid shut, cutting off his last word. Danny slumped. This was the third time in 3 days that Tam had gone out of his way to talk to her, in his inimitably clumsy fashion. Obviously, he'd developed an interest in her, and that was the last thing she needed. Oh, it wasn't that she disliked him, but her duties, analysis of Yuuzhan Vong technology, came first. Then there was her, as time allowed, training in the use of the Force, her occasional missions with the Wild Knights. She had meetings with the Insiders and lengthy consultations with others who were knowledgeable in Yuuzhan Vong technology, individuals such as Silgol, the Jedi healer from Mon Calamari. She had sleep, now her favorite hobby, appreciated because of its scarcity. She just didn't have time for the legions of male pilots, officers, technicians, and civilians who thought that she surely must be interested in spending some time with them. It was even worse with Tam, who stared at her with big, needy eyes, filled with an emotion she couldn't quite interpret. It wasn't love, or affection, or admiration. It was something like longing, only worse. If she didn't know better, she'd have said it was desperation. She rubbed her eyes in the vain hope that it would allow them to focus, then turned her attention back to her instruments. Preparing for bed, Yella asked, "Wedge, do you have any reason to distrust Luke and Mara? Or does Tycho?" Wedge lay back on the bed and winced in anticipation of the day's accumulation of aches and pains assaulting him. "Of course not. Why?" "A couple of days ago, I found a listening device planted in the Skywalker quarters. It was an amateur job, attached with a little patch of duracrete to a water pipe in their refresher, so it would only pick up conversations taking place in that one-person refresher, and only when water wasn't flowing through the pipe." He gave her a curious look. "Sounds like we're being spied on by someone who hasn't seen enough holodramas." She slid into place beside him. "Today I found the corresponding listening device in Tycho's quarters." Wedge chuckled. "So you suspect Tycho of wanting to listen to 14 hours a day of crying baby?" "Certainly not. But I'm taking it seriously because I don't know what it represents. I know what to do when I find signs that a competent agent is working against us. This is just confusing." "Maybe our enemy has two listening devices, one to listen to and one to plant to throw blame on Tycho." "That's a good guess. So what did you do about it?" "I left the listening device and told Luke and Mara not to talk in the refresher, and why. I'll script up some false leads for them to say within its range and see what comes of it." "Problem solved." Wedge reached over to switch off the bedside light.
Borlios Occupation, Day 15. It had been nearly a week since Luzonkia's arrival had smashed the Yuuzhan Vong fleet. Since then, squadrons and even smaller units of coral skippers, now based out of the captured lunar station of Vapyria 6, had harassed the New Republic ships in orbit and made some daring runs against the biotic station on the ground, but these attacks seemed little more than probes testing for weaknesses. Luke Skywalker and a man named Kel Tanner worked on Luke's X-Wing, patching up the damage done during the last attack. The damage was mostly minor, hull scoring and components shaken loose, but if allowed to accumulate, it would gradually render the snub fighter useless. Tanner was tall and in shape, the leanness of his muscles suggesting that they were for use rather than for show. His brown hair was receding from his forehead, but long in back and braided. He wore a droopy mustache and a close-trimmed beard. He looked like nothing so much as an asteroid miner or back-world mechanic, but Luke knew better.
"I thought you were intelligence," Luke said.
A needle-thin stream of lubricant sprayed from the engine he was working on, the one at lower starboard, and left a zigzag red-black mark on his cheek and forehead. He tightened the clamp over the perforated hose and mopped ruefully at the fluid on his face.
"A wraith, right?"
"You're not supposed to know that." Kell's voice was muffled. His upper body was wedged into the snub fighter's tiny cargo compartment. He dangled from the waist down out of the access hatch at the underside of the X-Wing's bow. It looked as though the X-Wing had decided to begin a career as a carnivorous beast, and Kell had been its first unresisting prey.
"Now I have to kill you," Luke grinned.
"What are you doing working with the mechanics?"
"Used to be a mechanic.
Worked for a while in a Sluice Van refitting shop that Admiral Thrawn's forces eventually blew up, in fact. But I could ask you the same thing. Thought you were a Jedi Master. What are you doing working with the mechanics?"
"Same answer, more or less. I had to maintain all my machinery on Tatooine when I was a kid, and many times since, and this is my X-Wing."
"Get in there, you little—" "All right, your ejector mechanism should be working again. Let me get this panel dogged down so your feet don't drop into the cargo compartment."
"I'd appreciate that. Not that my feet always reach the floor anyway."
Luke finished sealing off the second of two valves. He removed the damaged tubing in between and began attaching its replacement. Kell slid out from the compartment as though the carnivorous X-Wing had decided he just wasn't worth swallowing. He landed on his feet, nimble for such a big man.
"Want to test it?"
"No, thanks."
"Go ahead, hop in and fire it off. That's the only way to be sure it works."
Luke glanced up at the drooping metal docking bay ceiling 5 meters above their heads.
"No, thanks. Spoil sport."
Kell grabbed the lip of the hull beside the cockpit. The canopy was raised, allowing him the grip, and heaved himself up, leaning over into cockpit, his upper half disappearing from view again.
"You're Tyria Sarkin's husband, aren't you?"
"Aha, that's how you knew I was a wraith."
"Yes, I am."
"How is she doing?" Kell was silent for long moments. Luke heard the ratcheting sound of the man's hydrospanner.
"She's doing well," Kell said.
"Mostly she travels with our boy, Doran, teaching him the ways of the Jedi. She travels so far afield, she probably doesn't even know how bad the Yuuzhan Vong invasion has gotten. We have pretty much a long-distance marriage, months of separation, alternating with extravagant welcome-home celebrations. Back when you confirmed her in her rank as a Jedi Knight, that thrilled her for months, years."
"She earned it."
Luke finished fitting the second tube end and reopened the valves. The tube stiffened a little as lubricant coursed through it, but it held. Tyria Sarkin walked a strange and solitary path for a Jedi, Luke knew, but it was a path he was familiar with. It had been his own. He'd tested her about 20 years ago, when he'd first heard of her. A New Republic pilot candidate with Force abilities, but discovered that her powers were weak, her self-discipline inadequate to the task of shaping her into a Jedi. He'd let her down easy and suggested that she concentrate on her piloting skills, but sometime in the next few years she'd found the discipline she'd needed and resigned from the military to learn the ways of the Jedi. She'd learned mostly on her own, traveling and exploring, experimenting and investigating, reading communiques and advice Luke had sent her, but spending no time at Luke's Jedi Academy on Yavin 4. The fortunate thing, Luke reflected, was that she had never rejected Luke's guidance and authority the way disaffected Jedi like Kip Duron had. She had simply progressed in her own way, at her own rate. Kell dropped to the ferrocrete floor again.
"Hold on. Here, too, just about."
Then Luke felt a new presence and glanced over at the docking bay entrance. Yella Wasiri stood there. 30 standard minutes, she said. Insiders meeting.
The bantha crows at dawn, Kells said.
Yella blinked at him.
What? You know, the bantha crows at dawn. What's the countersign?
Kell aimed his hydrospanner at her as though it were a blaster.
Or perhaps you're not section head Yella Wasiri at all. Pull that Uglith masker off, or I open fire.
She gave him a thin smile.
My husband never really told me how annoying you were.
She turned to Luke.
30 minutes. There's news.
She turned and left. Kell adopted an expression of disdain.
No countersign, indeed. What sort of holodrama is this, anyway?
You're going to do what? Mara asked. Her voice had not risen to carry through the doors and into the conference room, but it had become sharper. It was loud enough to startle Ben. But the baby merely looked up from her arms, gurgled, looked at Luke, and reached out for his father. Luke gave him the pinky of his natural hand to grasp. Luke steeled himself.
I'm going to Coruscant.
Your visions?
They're getting worse and more frequent. Whatever is happening there, it's building, getting stronger. Or going to build, going to get stronger. I don't know if I'm seeing the present or the future.
Or the past. You could be seeing something about Palpatine's rise to power.
He shook his head.
There wouldn't be a sense of urgency to the visions.
Well, send someone else. This is an intelligence-style mission. Sneaking around in the dark. Not exactly suited to a fighter pilot with a glowing sword.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I should invite some intelligence types along. But since it's a matter of the Force, there has to be a Jedi there.
He gave her a reassuring grin.
Everything's better with a Jedi around.
Where did you learn that smile?
Have you been practicing in front of a hollow of Han Solo?
Listen, I'm not objecting to a Jedi going on this mission, but it can't be you. You can't go.
Why not?
Because I can't go. I have to stay with Ben.
It has to be me, Mara. With the galaxy falling apart and the Jedi needing leadership, and with so many of them looking at anyone but me because they believe I'm some sort of passive, prematurely ancient wise man on a mountaintop, I think it would be a good thing for them to hear that I've led a mission into Coruscant. They'll have to rethink my outlook and my opinions.
It occurred to Luke that Leia would probably be pleased with the political slant of his reasoning, and then he realized that he was once again playing in Leia's battlefield, the universe of politics, where she was a master and he was usually a floundering novice.
Don't do this, Skywalker.
I have to. Come with me.
I'm needed here.
That's what your feelings are telling you. What does the Force tell you?
Her eyes flashed.
It doesn't tell me anything.
Then you're not open to it. You're afraid of where it will lead you. You're afraid it will tell you that you need to step away from Ben, however temporarily.
Mara's face closed down, allowing no emotion to escape beyond the event horizon of her features.
I'll tell you what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that my husband is becoming some sort of dried-up desert mystic, cut off from human emotions.
Luke sighed and abandoned the argument.
The offer's open until I leave.
He cocked his head toward the conference room door.
We need to join the rest.
Luke took his customary chair beside Wedge at the head of the table. Mara, still stony-faced, sat beside Han and Leia. No one was talking. Instead, everyone watched Yella Wasiri as she moved the length of one wall, slowly and rhythmically waving an electronic device beside it. The lights on the device blinked a steady pattern in white. Wedge waited until Yella finished. She nodded at him to indicate that the chamber was free of listening devices.
2 hours ago, Wedge began, A refugee ship arrived from the direction of the Hapes cluster. It had been part of a fleet heading toward Hapes. The fleet had been assembled in considerable secrecy, but the Yuuzhan Vong intercepted it, and this ship was the only one to escape. This coincides with word we've received from Talon Card today that the Vong are becoming much more adept at tracking refugee traffic. I suspect that the New Republic fleet groups, under direct control of the Advisory Council, are going to be unable to devote their resources to this problem. So I'm going to devote some of ours. I'm looking for ideas. The first step, Luke said, has to be to figure out what the Yuuzhan Vong are doing, how they're getting their accurate information about refugee ship movements. It could be that they've infiltrated one of the Yuuzhan Vong into the refugee ship network, in which case you'll want a Jedi to travel on some of those voyages to try to find a crew member who can't be detected in the Force. Good point, Wedge said. Anyone else? Danny Quee waved from the back of the room. They could be using some sort of tracking creature. Also a good point, Wedge acknowledged. What do we do about that? Danny considered. Tracking creatures will probably be using gravitic fluctuations to signal their presence. I can build a detection device similar to what I'm using to track Yamask activities. If we mount it on a refugee vessel, it can record gravitic flux and determine whether a creature like that is aboard. But if the vessel doesn't survive the trip and we can't retrieve the recording, that does us no good. Corin Horn spoke up. So we make sure that the vessel survives. We put together a surprise for the Vong and then run the vessel on missions until they decide to take it. This has an additional benefit. The Yuuzhan Vong are preying pretty much at will on refugee ships. If Yuuzhan Vong vessels assigned to this duty start disappearing, they may have to rethink their operations. Good, Wedge said. Corin continued, but if the Yuuzhan Vong aren't using gravitic tracker creatures, we still have to figure out where the holes are in the security of the refugee network. We'll have to root out the problem the old-fashioned way. Well, it looks like we have some tactics to employ, Wedge said. I think we'll need a volunteer to coordinate this effort, and that volunteer can work with me and Tycho to assemble a mission. Anyone? Lando's hand was, to the surprise of the others, first in the air. I think it's about time I made a lot of Vong look bad, he said. In my own inimitable way, of course. Of course, Wedge grinned at him. I'll need communications access to Talon Card, Danny's device, a starfighter squadron, maybe a Jedi or two, and a lot of brandy. I can't stress the brandy part enough. Wedge gave him a dubious look. I think we've accomplished what we needed to, here. Does anyone have anything else? I do. Luke gave Mara an apologetic look. I'm going to Coruscant. Something's happening there. Something outside the activities of the Yuuzhan Vong, and I have to look into it. I suspect that once I'm there, I can find a way to get off-world. But what I don't know is how I'd get to the planet's surface. Intelligence can get you there, Yella said. We've been thinking about putting a team on the ground there. We need to set up resistance cells on Coruscant. We can combine the two missions. She gave him a wicked smile. I'll give you that extremely annoying mechanic. Thank you so much, Luke said, deadpan. Domain Law, Worldship, Mirker Orbit. He was a warrior of the Yuuzhan Vong, his face so thoroughly scarred and tattooed that the decorations all but hid his wrinkles of age, his augmented Von Dune crab armor concealing the leanness of active venerability. In his hands, coiled like a long rope, was an amphistaff of unusual type, far longer, much more slender than the standard Yuuzhan Vong weapon. One did not often see a Yuuzhan Vong warrior this old. Most had gone to a noble death long before achieving this age. He walked behind the black coral benches of his teaching chamber, behind the rows of his students, warrior officers clad only in loincloths. At the head of the chamber, Blaze Bugs took on the form of a planet, of its defensive platforms and screens, of attacking Yu Shan Vong forces. "See there," he said, "the upper right quadrant of the world Coruscant. The stream of ships against the visible screen, how it flares into incandescence and disappears. These ships held our enemies' refugees, and they disappeared because we ordered them into a region of space protected by the enemy's passive defenses, when they could no longer bear the notion that their innocent relatives were being consumed by their own defenses. They lowered those defenses, and we entered their world sanctuary." The blaze bugs altered their configuration so that the stream of ships passed through the shield, now accompanied by colors suggesting Yu Shan Vong attack craft. "Now, what was the most important piece of information we needed to implement this plan?" For a moment there was silence. Then a young warrior, his body scarcely graced by scars or tattoos, stood. He remained rigid, his back to the elderly instructor. "We needed to know where their passive defenses were." The elderly Yu Shan Vong drew back his coil of amphistaff and then snapped it forward. The pointed tail cracked out and stabbed into that warrior's back, punching a hole into the flesh over his shoulder blade. As the elderly one yanked his living whip back, the hole bled. "Sit," said the old one. "What you have just received is a Chulkan law pit. Everyone who studies with me receives several. They become badges of honor, a sign that you have survived instruction with Chulkan law. But the more hopeless among you receive many pits, countless pits. And rather than it being a badge of honor, such scars tell other officers that you were an idiot. I recommend you not gather unto yourself too many. Now, who will answer the question I asked?" No one stood or spoke. The old warrior sighed. "All stand, all but the one who had the courage to venture an answer." All the students, except the one still bleeding, rose. Chulkan Law lashed out at them, methodically and rhythmically cutting two pits in each back. The warriors he struck did not cry out. None offered any sound, more dismayed than a grunt. But they would remember this day, and how their fear of offering a wrong answer had earned them their teacher's ire. When he was halfway through the group of 30 students, one who had not yet been struck spoke up, saying, "We had to know that the enemy would sacrifice all to save a few. We had to know how they thought." "You, sit." Chulkan Law continued his whip-cracking, sparing the one who had last spoken. When all but that one had bloody backs, he said, "All sit. Now, all think. Tudrith Din is correct. We had to understand their weaknesses and their strengths, their ability to train great warriors, despite their daintiness concerning death and pain, their hateful love of machinery, and their correct evaluation of that machinery's effectiveness. We had to know, else we would not have beaten them on Coruscant, else we would not beat them elsewhere." A warrior with a bloody back stood. "May I ask a question, War Master?" "I am not War Master," Chulkan Law said. "Not for a lifetime. Yes, you may ask. I punish wrong conclusions, not curiosity." The warrior asked, "How can one understand the ways of the enemy without learning to think like the enemy? And if one learns to think like the enemy, is that one not infected with his thoughts and a danger to the Yu Shan Vong?" "A good question. Sit. Xu Kong Lao walked around to stand before his students. "The answer is as you suspect. For our theoretical tactician to think like the enemy is to be infected with his wrongness. If the infection is not too great, the tactician can cure himself by re-immersion in our ways. If the infection is too great, he can find a way to die honorably, knowing that his sacrifice has enriched us, so his infection is not a problem unless he passes it on to others. Remember, and this is the lesson that the enemy on Coruscant did not understand, individual survival is not important. As soon as you dispassionately place yourselves among those whom you are willing to send a certain death, you take another step towards strategic wisdom." He glanced past the ranks of his students at the figure, a distant silhouette who had just entered the Coraline chamber. "We are finished for now. Go." They rose and marched, nearly silent, on bare feet, from the chamber, glancing but not staring at the visitor, who remained at the rear, in the shadows, wrapped in a voluminous cloak. When they were gone, Xu Kong Lao moved forward. "Is it you?" Cao Wang Lao unwrapped himself from his cloak. "Father." Xu Kong Lao offered a nod of acknowledgment. "Son! Or is your visit as War Master?" Cao Wang Lao moved to stand beside his father. "As War Master and son. As son, I ask, how do you fare?" Xu Kong Lao bared his teeth. Their irregular and broken lines had been glimpsed through his slitted lips previously, but were now clearly revealed. "How do you think? I am old. But for my augmented armor, I could barely move. Aches befall me that have nothing to do with the marks I have put on myself over the years. And I am little but an honored prisoner here, unable to lead, and begged by my son not to die." "This has changed. You no longer wish me to teach. I wish you to lead." Xu Kong Lao did not bother to conceal his surprise. He leaned away from his son as if the few centimeters of additional distance would give him a better view. "Tell me. We have been somewhat embarrassed by a garrison defending a world at a hyperspace crossroads. Borlias, I am sure you know her. Pyria system, staging point for the assault on Coruscant." "Correct. The garrison defends the world with savagery and tactical brilliance. We are not sure why. Examination of one of their technical facilities in the system we captured indicates that they are developing something there, some new weapon to use against us. But unfortunately, their scientists were able to destroy most of the evidence before they fled. The resources they bring to bear, tactics I cannot explain, all suggest that something is afoot there. I need someone to go there, root out the mystery, and then destroy the garrison. And to do so in such a way that our embarrassment is forgotten, and theirs is legendary. Now, find someone else."
"Why?"
"When I succeed, it will have been just a bittersweet taste of what I once knew. I will not do this unless, once all is done, I retain a command, return to what I know best." Cao Wang Lao hesitated, and Xu Kong Lao continued. "You fear that I will bind the loyalties of officers, of whole domains, to me, and take from you the rank you once took from me, but I will not. I opposed you years ago because I opposed coming to this galaxy attacking these infidels, but we are here now. I have no reason to oppose you, plot against you. All I demand is that you give me a reason to continue living. His son hesitated a moment longer, then nodded.
When Borlyas has fallen, you will retain command, and the stories of new exploits will be added to your legend, as they should be. For now, I wish you to take Domain Hull and all her resources to the Pyria system and do what I have described.
It will be done.
After a moment, Chokong Law added, I am pleased that you came in person to ask.
No matter what our disagreements, you remain a hero to the Yuuzhan Vong and to your son. I owe you no less.